This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Maximum Ride, The Angel Experiment. Written by James Patterson, read by Casey Lee Heisenberg. For Jennifer Rudolph Walsh, Hadley Griffin and Wyatt Zangwill, Gabrielle Charbonnet, Monina and Pierre Valera, Susie and Jack, Mary Ellen and Andrew, Carol, Bridget, and Meredith. Fly, babies, fly. To the listener, the idea for Maximum Ride comes from earlier books of mine called When the Wind Blows and The Lake House, which also feature a character named Max who escapes from a quite despicable school. Most of the similarities end there. Warning. If you dare to listen to this story, you become part of the experiment. I know that sounds a little mysterious, but it's all I can say right now. Max. Prologue. Congratulations. The fact that you're listening to this means you've taken one giant step closer to surviving till your next birthday. Yes, you, hearing my voice right now, do not stop listening. I'm dead serious. Your life could depend on it. This is my story. The story of my family, but it could just as easily be your story, too. We're all in this together. Trust me on that. I've never done anything like this, so I'm just going to jump in and you try to keep up. Okay. I'm Max. I'm 14. I live with my family, who are five kids not related to me by blood, but still totally my family. We're kind of amazing. Not to sound too full of myself, but we're like nothing you've ever seen before. Basically, we're pretty cool, nice, smart, but not average in any way. The six of us, me, Fang, Iggy, Nudge, the Gas Man, and Angel, were made on purpose by the sickest, most horrible scientists you could possibly imagine. They created us as an experiment. An experiment where we ended up only 98% human. That other 2% has had a big impact, let me tell you. We grew up in a science lab slash prison called the school, in cages, like lab rats. It's pretty amazing we can think or speak at all, but we can, and so much more. There was one other school experiment that made it past infancy. Part human, part wolf, all predator. They're called erasers. They're tough, smart, and hard to control. They look human, but when they want to, they are capable of morphing into wolfmen, complete with fur, fangs, and claws. The school uses them as guards, police, and executioners. To them, we're six moving targets, prey smart enough to be a fun challenge. Basically, they want to rip our throats out and make sure the world never finds out about us. But I'm not lying down just yet. I'm telling you, right? This story could be about you or your children. If not today, then soon. So please, please take this seriously. I'm risking everything that matters by telling you, but you need to know. Keep listening. Don't let anyone stop you. Max and my family. Fang, Iggy, Nudge, the Gas Man, and Angel. Welcome to our nightmare. Part 1. Flock Fright. Chapter 1. The funny thing about facing imminent death is that it really snaps everything else into perspective. Take right now, for instance.
Run. Come on, run. You know you can do it. I gulped deep lungfuls of air. My brain was on hyperdrive. I was racing for my life. My one goal was to escape. Nothing else mattered. My arms being scratched to ribbons by a briar I'd run through? No biggie. My bare feet hitting every sharp rock, rough root, and pointed stick? Not a problem. My lungs aching for air? I could deal. As long as I could put as much distance as possible between me and the erasers. Yeah, erasers. Mutants. Half men, half wolves. Usually armed, always bloodthirsty. Right now, they were after me. See? That snaps everything into perspective.
Run. You're faster than they are. You can outrun anyone.
I'd never been this far from the school before. I was totally lost. Still. My arms pumped by my sides, my feet crashed through the underbrush, my eyes scanned ahead anxiously through the half-light. I could outrun them. I could find a clearing with enough space for me to...
Oh, no. Oh, no. The unearthly baying of bloodhounds on the scent wailed through the trees, and I felt sick.
I could outrun men. All of us could, even Angel, and she's only 6. But none of us could outrun a big dog. Dogs, dogs, go away. Let me live another day. They were getting closer. Dim light filtered in through the woods in front of me. A clearing? Please, please, a clearing could save me. I burst through the trees, chest heaving, a thin sheen of cold sweat on my skin. Yes! No! Oh, no! I skidded to a halt, my arms waving, my feet backpedaling in the rocky dirt. It wasn't a clearing. In front of me was a cliff, a sheer face of rock that dropped to an unseeable floor hundreds of feet below. In back of me were woods filled with drooling bloodhounds and psycho erasers with guns. Both options stank. The dogs were yelping excitedly. They had found their prey. Moi. I looked over the deadly drop. There was no choice, really. If you were me, you'd have done the same thing. I closed my eyes, held out my arms, and let myself fall over the edge of the cliff. The erasers screamed angrily, the dogs barked hysterically, and all I could hear was the sound of air rushing past me. It was so dang peaceful for a second. I smiled. Then, taking a deep breath, I unfurled my wings as hard and fast as I could. 13 feet across, pale tan with white streaks and some freckly-looking brown spots, they caught the air, and I was suddenly yanked upward, hard, as if a parachute had just opened. Yow! Note to self, no sudden unfurling. Wincing, I pushed downward with all my strength, then pulled my wings up, then pushed downward again. Oh my God, I was flying, just like I'd always dreamed. The cliff floor, draped in shadow, receded beneath me. I laughed and surged upward, feeling the pull of my muscles, the air whistling through my secondary feathers, the breeze drying the sweat on my face. I soared up past the cliff edge, past the startled hounds and the furious erasers. One of them, hairy-faced, fangs dripping, raised his gun. A red dot of light appeared on my torn nightgown. Not today, you jerk, I thought, veering sharply west so the sun would be in his hate-crazed eyes. I am not going to die today. Chapter 2. I jolted upright in bed, gasping, my hand over my heart. I couldn't help checking my nightgown. No red laser dot, no bullet holes. I fell back on my bed, limp with relief. Jeez, I hated that dream. It was always the same, running away from the school, being chased by erasers and dogs, me falling off a cliff, then suddenly, whoosh, wings, flying, escaping. I always woke up feeling a second away from death. Note to self, give subconscious a pep talk. Better dreams. It was chilly, but I forced myself out of my cozy bed. I threw on clean sweats. Amazingly, Nudge had put the laundry away. Everyone else was still asleep. I could have a few minutes of peace and quiet, get a jump on the day. I glanced out the hall windows on the way to the kitchen. I loved this view. The morning sunlight breaking over the crest of the mountains, the clear sky, the deep shadows, the fact that I could see no sign of any other people. We were high on a mountain, safe, just me and my family. Our house was shaped like a letter E turned on its side. The bars of the E were cantilevered on stilts out over a steep canyon, so if I looked out a window, I felt like I was floating. On a cool scale from 1 to 10, this house was easily a 15. Here, my family and I could be ourselves. We could live free. I mean literally free, as in not in cages. Long story. More on that later. And of course, here's the best part. No grown-ups. When we first moved here, Jeb Batchelder had taken care of us, like a dad. He'd saved us. None of us had parents, but Jeb had come as close as possible. 2 years ago, he'd disappeared. I knew he was dead. We all did, but we didn't talk about it. Now we were on our own. Yep, no one telling us what to do, what to eat, when to go to bed. Well, except me. I'm the oldest, so I try to keep things running as best I can. It's a hard, thankless job, but someone has to do it. We don't go to school either, so thank God for the internet, because otherwise we wouldn't know nothing. But no schools, no doctors, no social workers knocking on our door. It's simple. If no one knows about us, we stay alive. I was rustling around for food in the kitchen when I heard sleepy shuffling behind me. Morning, Max. Chapter 3. "Morning, Gazi," I said, as the heavy-lidded 8-year-old slumped at the table. I rubbed his back and dropped a kiss on his head. He'd been the gas man ever since he was a baby.
What can I say? The child has something funky with his digestive system.
A word to the wise, stay upwind. The gas man blinked up at me, his gorgeous blue eyes round and trusting. "What's for breakfast?" he asked, sitting up. His fine blonde hair stuck up all over his head, reminding me of a fledgling's downy feathers.
It's a surprise, I said, since I had no idea.
"I'll pour juice," the gas man offered, and my heart swelled.
He was a sweet, sweet kid, and so was his little sister. He and 6-year-old Angel were the only blood siblings among us, but we were all a family anyway.
Soon Iggy, tall and pale, slouched into the kitchen. Eyes closed, he fell onto our beat-up couch with perfect aim. The only time he has trouble being blind is when one of us forgets and moves furniture or something.
"Hey, Ig, rise and shine," I said.
"Bite me,"
he mumbled sleepily. "Fine," I said, "miss breakfast."
I was looking in the fridge with naive hope. Maybe the food fairies had come. When the back of my neck prickled, I straightened quickly and spun around. "Will you quit that?" I said.
Fang always appeared silently like that, out of nowhere, like a dark shadow come to life. He regarded me calmly, dressed and alert, his dark, overlong hair brushed back. He was 4 months younger than me, but already 4 inches taller.
"Quit what?" he asked calmly.
"Breathing?" I rolled my eyes.
"You know what?"
With a grunt, Iggy staggered upright. "I'll make eggs," he announced.
I guess if I were more of a fembot, it would bother me that a blind guy 6 months younger than I am could cook better than I could.
But I'm not. So it didn't.
I surveyed the kitchen.
Breakfast was well underway.
"Fang, you set the table. I'll go get Nudge and Angel." The two girls shared the last small bedroom. I pushed the door open to find 11-year-old Nudge asleep, tangled up in her covers. She was barely recognizable with her mouth shut, I thought wryly. When she was awake, we called it the Nudge Channel. All Nudge, all the time.
"Hey, sweetie. Up and at 'em," I said, gently shaking her shoulder.
"Breakfast in 10.
Nudge blinked, her brown eyes struggling to focus on me.
"What?"
she mumbled.
"Another day," I said. "Get up and face it."
Groaning, Nudge levered herself into a crumpled but technically upright position. Across the room, a thin curtain concealed one corner. Angel always liked small, cozy spaces. Her bed, tucked behind the curtain, was like a nest, full of stuffed animals, books, most of her clothes. I smiled and pulled the curtain back.
"Hey, you're already dressed," I said, leaning over to hug her.
"Hi, Max," Angel said, tugging her blonde curls out of her collar.
"Can you do my buttons?"
"Yep." I turned her around and started doing her up.
I'd never told the others, but I just loved, loved, loved Angel. Maybe because I'd been taking care of her practically since she was a baby. Maybe because she was just so incredibly sweet and loving herself.
"Maybe because I'm like your little girl,"
said Angel, turning around to look at me.
"But don't worry, Max, I won't tell anybody. Besides, I love you best, too."
She threw her skinny arms around my neck and planted a somewhat sticky kiss on my cheek.
I hugged her back, hard. Oh yeah, that's another special thing about Angel.
She can read minds. Chapter 4.
"I want to go pick strawberries today," Angel said firmly, scooping up a forkful of scrambled eggs. "They're ripe now."
"Okay, Angel, I'll go with you," said the gas man. Just then, he let rip one of his unfortunate occurrences and giggled.
"Oh, geez, Gazzy," I said disapprovingly.
"Gas mask,"
Iggy choked out, grasping his neck and pretending to asphyxiate.
"I'm done," Fang said, getting up quickly and taking his plate to the sink.
"Sorry," the gas man said automatically, but he kept eating.
"Yeah, Angel," said Nudge. "I think the fresh air would do us all good." "I'll go too."
"We'll all go," I said. Outside, it was beautiful, clear, and cloudless, with the first real heat of May.
We carried buckets and baskets as Angel led us to a huge patch of wild strawberries. She held my hand.
"If you make cake, I can make strawberry shortcakes," she said happily.
"Yeah, that'll be the day when Max makes a cake," I heard Iggy say. "I'll make it, Angel." I whirled.
"Oh, thank you," I exclaimed.
"Okay, I'm not a fabulous cook, but I can still kick your butt, and don't you forget it."
Iggy was laughing, holding up his hands in denial. Nudge was trying not to laugh, even Fang was grinning, and the gas man looked mischievous. Was that you? I asked Gazzy. He grinned and shrugged, trying not to look too pleased with himself. The gas man had been about 3 when I realized he could mimic just about any sound or voice. I'd lost count of how many times Iggy and Fang had almost come to blows over stuff Gazzy had said in their voices. It was a dark gift, and he wielded it happily. It was just another weird ability. Most of us had them. Whatever they were, they sure made life more interesting. Next to me, Angel froze and screamed. Startled, I'd stared down at her, and in the next second, men with wolfish muzzles, huge canines, and reddish, glinting eyes dropped out of the sky like spiders. Erasers! And it wasn't a dream. Chapter 5. There was no time to think. Jeb had trained us not to think, just to act. I launched myself at an eraser, spinning and planting a hard roundhouse kick in his barrel chest. His breath went oof, and the odor was just awful, like raw sewage left out in the hot sun. After that, it was like a movie, a bunch of superimposed images that hardly seemed real. I landed another blow, then an eraser punched me so hard that my head snapped around and I felt a burst of blood in my mouth. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Fang holding his own against an eraser, until 2 more ganged up on him, and he went down under flailing, clawed hands. Iggy was still upright, but one eye was already swelling shut. Beyond shock, I scrambled to my feet, then saw the gas man out cold, lying face down on the ground. I leaped toward him, only to be grabbed again. 2 erasers pinned my arms behind my back. Another leaned in, his reddish eyes glinting with excitement, his jaw fully morphed out and snout-like. He pulled back his hand and curled it into a fist. Then he brought it in, hard, punching me in the stomach. An unbelievable pain exploded inside me, and I doubled over, dropping like a stone. Dimly, I heard Angel screaming and Nudge crying. Get up, I told myself, trying to suck in air. Get up. As weird mutant kids, we're much, much stronger than regular grown-up humans. But erasers aren't regular grown-up humans, and they outnumbered us as well. We were dog meat. I struggled to my hands and knees, trying not to retch. I staggered to my feet, bloodlust in my eyes, ready to kill. 2 erasers held Nudge's hands and feet. They swung her hard, and she went sailing, hitting her head against a tree. I heard a small, pained cry, and then she lay crumpled among the pine needles. With a hoarse, blood-muffled shout, I ran up and clapped my cupped palms around an eraser's furry ears. He shrieked as his eardrums popped, and he fell to his knees. Max! Angel screamed, high-pitched and terrified, and I spun around. An eraser had her by the arms, and I raced forward, jumping over Iggy, who now lay unconscious. 2 erasers fell on me, knocking me down, one pressing a heavy knee into my chest. I wheezed and struggled, and one of them cuffed my face hard, his ragged claws digging deep welts into my cheek. Dizzily, I fell back, the 2 erasers pinning me, and with uncomprehending horror, I saw 3 other erasers stuffing Angel, my baby, into a rough sack. She was crying and screaming, and one of them hit her. Frantically struggling, I tried to scream but could make only a hoarse, choked cry. Get off me, you stupid freaking! I choked, but I was slammed back again. An eraser leaned over me, smiling horribly. Max, he said, and my stomach clenched. Did I know him? Good to see you again, he went on conversationally. You look like crap. You always acted so much better than everyone else, so this cheers me up. Who are you? I gasped, feeling cold at the center of my being. The eraser grinned, his long, sharp teeth barely fitting in his jaw. You don't recognize me. I guess I've grown some. My eyes went wide with sudden, horrified recognition. Ari, I whispered, and he laughed like a mad person. Then he stood up. I saw his huge, black boot come at my head. I felt my head jerk to one side, and everything went black. My last thought was disbelief. Ari was Jeb's son. They'd made him into an eraser. He was 7 years old. Chapter 6. Max? The gas man's voice was very young and very scared. I heard a horrible, low moan, and realized it had come from me. The gas man and Fang were leaning over me, concerned expressions on their bruised, bloodied faces.
I'm okay,
I croaked, having no idea if I was or not.
Memory came rushing back, and I tried to sit up.
Where's Angel? My voice was strained.
Fang's dark eyes met mine.
She's gone. They took her.
I thought I might faint again. I remembered being 9 years old, looking out the wired glass lab window, watching the erasers in the semi-darkness. The white coats had released chimpanzees onto the school grounds and let newly made erasers loose after them, teaching them how to hunt. The sounds of the chimpanzees screeching in terror and pain still echoed in my mind. That was who had Angel now. Rage overwhelmed me. Why couldn't they have taken me instead? Why take a tiny kid? Maybe I would have had a chance, maybe. Shakily, I got to my feet. My head was spinning, and I had to lean against Fang, hating my weakness. We've got to get her, I said urgently, trying to stay upright. We've got to get her before they... Horror-filled images flashed through my mind. Angel being chased, being hurt, being killed. I gulped, shutting them down. Check in, guys. Are you up for a chase? I examined the four of them. They looked like they'd been stuffed into a blender set on chop. Yes, Nudge said in a tear-choked voice. I'm up, said Iggy, a split lip making his voice thick. The gas man nodded solemnly at me. To my horror, hot tears momentarily blurred my vision. I wiped them away with the back of one hand and called on Fury to keep me going. Just then, Iggy cocked his head slightly. It was a clue for me to start listening intently. Then I heard it too. A faint engine noise. There, Iggy said, pointing. The five of us ran stiffly and clumsily toward the sound. 100 yards through the woods brought us to a sharp drop-off, maybe 50 feet above an old, unused logging road. Then I saw it, a black Humvee, dull with dust and mud, bumping roughly over the unpaved road. My heart pounded. I knew, just knew, that my little one, my Angel, was inside. And she was on her way to a place where death came as a blessing. It wasn't going to happen. Not while I was breathing. Let's get her, I cried, then backed up about 10 feet. The others scurried out of my way as I ran to the edge and simply jumped out into space. I started to fall toward the road. Then I unfurled my wings fast, catching the wind, and I began to fly. Chapter 7. You see, that nightmare I had is actually hard to tell apart from my real life. My friends and I really did used to live at a stinking cesspool of evil called the school. We were created by scientists, white coats, who grafted avian DNA onto our human genes. Jeb had been a white coat, but he'd felt sorry for us, cared about us, and kidnapped us away from there. We were bird kids, a flock of six, and the erasers wanted to kill us. Now they had 6-year-old Angel. I gave a strong push down and then up, feeling my shoulder muscles working to move my 13-foot wingspan. I banked sharply, heading after the Humvee. A quick glance back revealed that Nudge had jumped out after me, then Iggy, the gas man, and Fang. In tight formation, we swerved down toward the car. Fang snatched a dead branch off a tree. He dropped straight down and smashed it against the Humvee's front windshield. The vehicle swerved. A window rolled down. A gun barrel poked out. Around me, trees started popping with bullets. The smell of hot metal and gun smoke filled the air. I looped back into the tree line, still tracking the car. Fang smashed the windshield again. Bullets spit from several windows. Fang wisely surged away. Angel! I screamed. We're here! We're coming for you! Up ahead, called Fang, and I saw a clearing maybe 200 yards away. Through the trees, I could barely see the greenish outline of a chopper. The Humvee was bouncing heavily over the rutted road. I met Fang's eyes, and he nodded. Our chance was when they moved Angel from the car to the chopper. It all happened so fast, though. The Humvee braked awkwardly, sliding in the mud. The door burst open, and an eraser sprang out. Fang dropped on him, then recoiled with a yell, his arm dripping with blood. The eraser sped toward the chopper, throwing himself through the open hatch. A second eraser, showing his huge yellow canine teeth, leaped from the car and hurled something into the air. Shouting, Nudge grabbed Iggy's hand and they pulled backward fast as a grenade exploded in front of them, spewing chunks of metal and tree bark everywhere. The chopper's rotor was picking up speed, and I shot out from behind the trees. They were not going to take my baby. They were not taking her back to that place. Ari jumped out of the car, carrying the sack with Angel in it. I tore toward the chopper, fear and desperate anger making my blood sing. Ari threw Angel's sack in through the open door. He jumped in behind, an incredible athlete himself. With a furious roar, I sprang up and caught hold of the chopper's landing skid just as it took off. The metal was hot from the sun and too wide to hold. I hooked one arm over it, trying to steady myself. The massive downdraft from the rotors almost snapped my wings in half. I pulled them in, and the erasers laughed, pointing at me as they closed the glass hatch. Ari was right there. He picked up a rifle and aimed it at me.
"Let me tell you a secret, old pal, old chap," Ari yelled at me. "You've got it all wrong. We're the good guys."
"Angel," I whispered, near tears. Ari's claw tightened on the trigger. He would do it. And dead, I would be no use to anybody. My heart breaking, I let go, falling fast, just as I saw a small, tousled, blonde head shake itself free of the sack. My baby, flying away toward her death. And, trust me on this, things much worse than death.
Chapter 8. We all have great vision, raptor vision. So we had the excruciating pain of watching the helicopter take Angel away for much longer than the average person. My throat closed with a sob. Angel, whom I had cared for since she was a baby with goofy chicken wings, I felt like they had chopped my own right wing off, leaving a ragged, gaping wound.
"They have my sister!" the gas man howled, throwing himself down. He always tried so hard to be a tough guy, but he was only 8. And he'd just seen his sister kidnapped by the hounds of hell. He pounded the dirt with his fists, and Fang knelt next to him, one arm tenderly around his shoulder.
"Max, what are we gonna do?"
Nudge's eyes were swimming with tears. She was bruised and bloody, her fists clenching and unclenching anxiously.
"They have Angel!"
Suddenly, I knew I was going to implode. Without a word, I pushed off from the ground, wings out, taking off as fast as I could. I flew out of sight, out of the other's hearing. Ahead was a huge Douglas fir, and I landed ungracefully on one of its upper branches, maybe 175 feet in the air, scrabbling to catch hold because I'd overshot. Gasping, I clung to the limb. "Okay, Max, think. Think. Fix this. Figure something out." My brain was flooded with too much thought, emotion, confusion, rage, pain. I needed to get a grip. But I couldn't get a grip. It was like I'd just lost my little sister, and like I had lost my little girl.
"Oh, God! Angel! Angel! Angel!"
Yelling as loud as I could, I made fists and punched the chunky bark of the fir tree hard, over and over, until finally actual pain seeped into my seared consciousness. I stared at my knuckles, saw the blood, the missing skin, the splinters. The physical pain hurt much less than the mental kind. My angel, my baby, had been snatched away. She was with bloodthirsty man-wolf mutants eager for her blood who would turn her over to despicable lab geeks who wanted to take her apart. Literally. Then I was crying, clinging to the tree as if it were a lifeboat from the Titanic, and I sobbed and sobbed until I thought I'd make myself sick. Gradually, the sobs slowed to shudders, and I wiped my face on my shirt, leaving streaks of blood. I sat in the tree until my breathing calmed and my brain seemed to be hitting on most cylinders again. My hands were killing me, though. Note to self, stop punching inanimate objects. Okay, it was time to go down and be strong, to get everyone together, to come up with Plan B. And one other thing, Ari's last words were still screaming in my brain. We're the good guys.
Chapter 9. I don't even remember flying home. I felt heartbroken and numb, and when we walked into the kitchen, the first thing I saw was Angel's breakfast plate on the table. Iggy howled and swept his hand across the kitchen counter, catapulting a mug through the air. It hit Fang in the side of the head. "Watch it, idiot," he yelled at Iggy furiously. Then he realized what he'd said, clenched his teeth, and rolled his eyes at me in frustration. Tears were streaming down my cheeks, their salt stinging where the eraser had raked me with his claws. Moving automatically, I got the first aid kit and started cleaning the gas man's scrapes and cuts. I looked around. Nudge's cheek was bleeding. Some shrapnel had burned her as it flew past. For once, she wasn't talking. She was curled on the couch, crying. The gas man glanced up at me. How did you let this happen, Max? I was asking myself the same question. True. I'm the leader. I'm Max the Invincible. But I'm also just a 14-year-old kid. And every once in a while, like when I realize all over again that Jeb is gone forever, that we're on our own, that the others depend on me and I can't let them down, well, that's when it all gets to me. Suddenly, I'm a little kid again, wishing Jeb were back, or, hey, wishing I was normal, or had parents. Yeah, right. You watch it, Iggy shouted at Fang. What happened? I mean, you guys can see, can't you? Why couldn't you get Angel? They had a chopper, the gas man yelled, squirming out of my reach. And guns! We're not bulletproof! Guys, I yelled. We're all upset, but we're not the enemy. They're the enemy. I stuck the last band-aid on the gas man and started pacing. Just be quiet for a minute so I can think, I added more calmly. It wasn't their fault our rescue mission had been such a total ditcher. It wasn't their fault Angel was gone. It was their fault that the kitchen looked like it belonged to a family of hygiene-challenged jackals, but I would deal with that later, whenever that kind of thing became important again, if ever. Iggy moved to the couch and almost sat on Nudge. She scooted to one side, and when he sat down, she put her head on his shoulder. He stroked her hair. Take deep breaths, the gas man advised me, looking concerned. I almost burst into tears again. I had let his sister get kidnapped, failed to save her, and he was worried about me. Fang was darkly silent. His eyes watched me as he opened a can of ravioli and picked up a fork with a heavily bandaged hand.
You know, if they just wanted to kill her, or kill all of us, they could have, Nudge said shakily. They had guns. They wanted Angel alive for some reason, and they didn't care if we were alive or not. I mean, they didn't go out of their way to make sure we were dead, is what I'm saying. So that makes me think we have time to go after Angel again.
But they were in a chopper, said the gas man. They're way gone. They could be anywhere.
His lower lip trembled, and he clenched his jaw.
Like China or something.
I went over and ruffled his already ruffled blonde hair. I don't think they took her to China, Gazzy.
We know where they took her. Fang's calm words fell like stones.
He scraped the bottom of the can with his fork.
Where's that? Iggy asked, raising his head, his blind eyes bloodshot with unshed tears.
The school, Fang and I said at the same time. Well, as you can imagine, that went over like a ton of freaking bricks. Chapter 10. Nudge gasped, her hand over her mouth, her eyes wide. The gas man looked scared, then tried to wipe it off his face. Iggy's spine tightened, his face like ice. When he'd been at the school, they'd tried to surgically enhance his night vision. Now he was blind forever. Oops.
They took Angel back to the school?
The gas man asked, confused. I think so, I said, trying to sound together and leaderly, as if I weren't screaming with panic inside.
Why? Nudge whispered. After 4 years, I thought maybe they had forgotten.
They want us back, said Fang.
We'd never really talked about this. It was like, out of sight, out of mind. Actually, more like, let's all try to forget when we were at the mercy of sadistic spawns of Satan in a place that's a total hellish abomination and ought to be firebombed.
Yeah, more like that.
They'll never forget about us. Jeb wasn't supposed to take us out of there, I reminded the gas man.
Jeb knew they would do anything to get us back. If anyone ever discovered what they did to us, it would be the end of the school, Fang explained.
Why don't we tell on them then? Nudge demanded. We could go to a TV station and tell everyone and say, look, they grew wings on us and we were just little kids and...
Okay, that would fix them, Iggy interrupted, but we'd end up in a zoo.
Well, what are we gonna do then? The gas man was starting to sound panicky.
Fang had gotten up and left the room, and now he returned, holding a sheaf of yellowed, fading papers. The edges looked nibbled, and he shook some mouse poop off.
Ew, said Nudge, wiping her nose on her sleeve. Ew, was that?
Here, said Fang, pushing the papers at me.
They were Jeb's ancient printed-out files. After he disappeared,
We'd cleared off his desk and shoved everything in the back of a closet so he wouldn't have to look at it all the time. We spread the papers out on the kitchen table. Just looking at them made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. Not to mention the strong eau de mouse. I'd rather have been doing anything but. Fang started to shift through the pile. He found a large manila envelope sealed with a clump of wax. After looking at me, catching my nod, he popped the wax with his thumbnail.
"What is that?" asked the gas man.
"Map," Fang said, pulling out a faded topographical drawing.
"Map of what?"
Nudge leaned closer, peering over Fang's shoulder. "Map of a secret facility," I said, feeling my stomach clench. I'd hoped I'd never have to see it again, never break that wax seal. In California. The school. Chapter 11.
"What?"
the gas man squeaked. Iggy went even paler than normal, if possible. "That's where they took Angel," I said, "and that's where we have to go to get her back."
"Oh," said Nudge, her brain hitting overdrive. "Yeah, we have to go get Angel back. We can't let her stay there with them. They're monsters. They're going to do bad things to her and put her in a cage, hurt her. But there's 5 of us, so the rest of us have to go get—"
I had wrapped my hand across her mouth. She peeled my fingers apart.
How far is it?"
600 miles, more or less," Fang said. "At least a 7-hour flight, not including breaks."
"Can we discuss this?" Iggy asked, not turning his head. "We're way outnumbered."
"No," I scanned the map, already working out routes, rest stops, backup plans.
"Can we take a vote? They had guns and a chopper."
There was an edge in Iggy's voice. "Iggy, this is not a democracy," I said, understanding his fear but unable to do anything about it. "It's a maxocracy. You know we have to go after Angel. You can't be thinking that we would just let them take her. The 6 of us look out for one another, no matter what. None of us is ever going to live in a cage again, not while I'm alive." I took a deep breath. "But actually, Nudge, Fang, and I are going after Angel. You and the gas man, I need you to stay here. Hold down the fort. On the off chance Angel escapes and makes her way home." There was a moment of dead silence.
"You're so full of it," said Iggy, turning toward me. "That's not why you want us here. Why don't you just say it?"
Tension was making my stomach hurt. I didn't have time for this. No, Angel didn't have time for this. "Okay," I said, trying for a placating tone. "It's true. I don't want you to come. The fact is, you're blind, and while you're a great flyer around here where you know everything, I can't be worrying about you in the middle of a firefight with the erasers." Iggy's face twisted in anger. He opened his mouth, but got cut off.
"What about me?" the gas man squealed. "I don't care if they have guns and a chopper and erasers. She's my sister."
"That's right. And if they want her so bad, they might want you just as bad," I pointed out. "Plus, you're a great flyer, but you're 8 years old, and we're going to be logging major hours."
"Jeb would never have made us stay," Iggy said angrily. "Never, ever."
I pressed my lips together. I was doing the best I could.
"Maybe not," I admitted. "We'll never know. Jeb's dead. Now everyone get your gear together."
Part 2. Hotel California, sort of. Chapter 12. "We clear on Plan B?" I asked, raising my voice so Fang and Nudge could hear me over the roar of the wind. We were headed into the sun, south-southwest, leaving the Sangre de Cristo Mountains behind, streaking through the sky at a steady 90 miles per hour. If we hit a nice air current, we could add 20 miles per hour to our speed. The glory of flight. Fang nodded. God, is he ever the strong and silent type.
"Uh-huh," said Nudge. "If we get separated somehow, though I don't see how we could, unless maybe one of us gets lost in a cloud or something. Do you think that could happen? I haven't ever been inside a cloud. I bet it's creepy. Can you see anything inside a cloud?"
I shot her a look. She paused, then quickly finished.
"We meet up at the northmost point of Lake Mead."
I nodded.
"And where's the school?" "In Death Valley, 8 miles due north from the Badwater Basin."
Her mouth opened to add more, but I raised my eyebrows at her. I love Nudge. Nudge is a great kid. But that motor mouth of hers could have turned Mother Teresa into an axe murderer. "You got it," I said. "Good job."
"Did you hear that address?"
Could the school be located in a more perfect place?
Death Valley? Above the Badwater Basin? Like, when we got there, we'd see a road paved with good intentions and have to cross the River Styx to get in. Wouldn't surprise me.
The wind was undoing my braid, and chunks of long hair whipped annoyingly across my face. Note to self, cut hair short. The gas man and Iggy had been none too happy campers when we'd left, but I thought I'd made the right decision. That was the problem with this leader stuff. It didn't come with an instruction manual. Given what Angel was facing, their being unhappy was the least of my concerns. I glanced over at Fang and saw that his face looked serene, almost, well, not exactly happy. Fang's never happy, but just really calm. I edged closer to him. On the plus side, flying is just really, really cool, I said, and he looked at me with a half-smile of understanding. His dark wings moved powerfully, glinting faintly purple in the sunlight. The wind was whistling in our ears. We could see everything for miles. It was like being God, I imagine. Oh yeah. On the minus side, we're mutant freaks who will never live a normal life. Fang shrugged.
Win some, lose some.
I was too upset to laugh, but gave a wry smile and looked over at Nudge. She was 3 years younger than us, but was holding her own. Like all of us, she was tall for her age, and skinny, probably weighing no more than 60 pounds, thanks to her strong, light bird bones. 90 miles an hour wasn't fast enough. The scientists at the school could do a lot of damage in 7 hours. Even so, I knew we'd have to take a break before we got there. If we were going to hit the school, we'd need to be rested, not hungry. I checked my watch. We'd been skyborne for a good 2 hours. I was already feeling empty, a little shaky. Flying burned energy like nothing else, and after a long flight, I felt like I could eat a cow, fork optional. Even needing to get to Angel, we couldn't forget the basic necessity of eating. Max? Nudge's big eyes, the same tawny russet as her wings, looked over at me. I was thinking.
Here we go.
I mean, right before we left. I just looked at Jeb's old files, you know? And some of them were about us, or me. I saw my name on a page, my real name, Monique, and then, like, some people's names, and then Topisco, Arizona. Topisco is right on the Arizona-California border. I found it on the map. Real tiny town, it looked like. Anyway, I was thinking, none of us ever knew our real parents, and, you know, you always wondered, or at least, I mean, I've always wondered, but I guess the rest of you have too, like, whether they gave me up voluntarily, or whether...
Nudge, I know how you feel. But those names might not have anything to do with you. We don't know if we were just test tube babies or what. Please, let's focus on rescuing Angel.
No response.
Nudge?
Yeah, okay. I was just thinking.
I knew this one was going to come back and bite me in the butt.
Chapter 13. Her mouth was so dry. Her head ached. Everything ached. Angel blinked several times, trying to wake up. Above her was a dark black plastic roof, a cage, a dog crate, a canine camper size medium. Fuzzy thoughts pushed at her brain as she struggled to a sitting position. She knew where she was. She would recognize that chemical disinfectant smell anywhere. She was at the school.
New in wings, and new wings, girl, new.
Quickly, Angel turned in the direction of the thoughts. In a crate next to hers were two other children, younger than she. Their eyes, too big for their hungry faces, locked onto her.
Hi,
Angel whispered. She didn't feel any white coats around, just the scrambled, incoherent thoughts of these kids.
Mouth, noise, girl, wings, new.
The other children stared without answering. Trying to smile, Angel looked at them more closely. She thought they were both boys. One had rough, scaly skin, literally scaly, like a fish, but just in patches, not all over. Not a happy effect. The other one just looked like a mistake. He had extra fingers and toes and hardly any neck. His eyes were huge and bulging, and the hair on his head was sparse. It made Angel's heart hurt just to look at him.
I'm Angel, she whispered again. Do you have names?
Noise, bad, girl, wings, bad, noise.
The two boys looked afraid, and they turned from her and edged farther back in their cage. Angel swallowed hard and was quiet. What had happened to Max and the others?
Were they in cages too? A door opened, and footsteps sounded on the linoleum floor. Angel felt the caged boys trembling with dread, crazed, swirling thoughts of fear crashing in their brains. They huddled together at the back of their cage, but the two white coats stopped in front of Angel's.
Oh my God, Harrison was right, one white coat said, hunching down to stare at Angel through the grate. They got her. Do you know how long I've waited to get my hands on this one?
He turned excitedly to the other white coat.
Did you ever read the director's precept report about this recombinant group?
Yeah, but I wasn't sure I believed it, said the other white coat, a woman. Are you saying this is Subject 11? This little girl?
The first white coat rubbed his hands together with glee.
You're looking at it.
He leaned forward to unhook her cage door.
Come on, little thing. You're wanted in Lab 7. Oh, yes. Man, when I section her brain.
Angel winced. Then rough hands dragged her out. Pathetic relief washed through the boys that it was she who was being taken, and not them. Angel didn't blame them one bit. Chapter 14.
Max, I'm starving.
I had been ignoring my own ferociously growling innards for half an hour. There was no way I was going to break first and give Fang the satisfaction? I don't think so. But I did have an obligation as a leader to take care of Nudge. As much as I hated to stop and lose time, it was a reality.
Okay. We need food. How's that for incisive leadership?
Fang, we need to refuel. Ideas?
Fang pondered. It always amazes me how he's able to seem so calm at the absolute worst times.
Sometimes he seems like a droid or a drone. Fang of 9, Fang 2D2.
Below us were mountains, the San Francisco peaks, according to our map. Our glances met. It was creepy how we knew what each other was thinking so much of the time.
Ski slopes, I said, and he nodded. Summertime, empty vacation houses.
Would they have food? Nudge asked.
Let's go find out, I said.
We flew in a big circle around the edge of the mountains. Small towns that came alive in winter dotted the foothills. I led us away from them, to where a few homes stood like train-set models among the trees. One house was apart from the others. No cars parked outside, no smoke coming from the chimney, nobody home.
I banked and slowed, tucked my wings in a bit, and started to drop. We landed 100 yards away. As usual, after flying for hours, my legs felt a tad rubbery. I shook them out, then folded my warm wings in tight against my body.
Nudge and Fang did the same. We crept quietly through the woods. No signs of life. The porch was covered with pine needles. The driveway hadn't been used. The shrubbery was way overgrown. I gave Nudge the thumbs up, and she smiled. Though, amazingly, she stayed quiet. Bless you, child. A quick reconnaissance revealed no alarm system I could see. No red lights blinking inside for motion detectors. This wasn't a big fancy house worth alarming anyway. It was just a teeny tiny vacation cottage. With my pocket knife, I slid a window screen and unhooked the latch. The screen lifted off easily, and I set it carefully against the side of the house. A thoughtful burglar.
That's me.
Then Fang and I shook the old window frame until the lock at the top jiggled open. Fang climbed in first, then I boosted Nudge in, then I scrambled in and shut the window. Dust covered everything. The fridge was turned off, its door open. I started opening kitchen cupboards.
Bingo, I said, holding up a dusty can of soup. Oh yeah, pay dirt, woohoo! Cans of beans, fruit, condensed milk, whatever that was, sounded bad. The ever-popular ravioli, we're golden.
Fang found some dusty bottles of orange soda, and we popped those suckers open.
But let me tell you, there's a reason people serve that stuff cold.
Half an hour later, we were sprawled on the musty couches, our eyes at half-mast, our bellies way too full. Nudge moaned.
I feel like concrete.
Let's take 10, rest a bit, Fang said, closing his eyes.
He lay back against the couch and crossed his long legs.
Digest a minute, we'll feel better. I second that emotion, I muttered, my own eyes closing. We're coming, Angel.
In a minute.
Chapter 15.
Let's throw all their stuff into the canyon, Iggy said angrily, punching a door frame.
Having to listen to the rest of the flock leaving while he sat around being blind was more than he could stand.
I think even their beds would fit out the hall window.
The gas man scowled.
I can't believe I have to stay home while they go off and save my own sister.
He kicked a worn red sneaker against the kitchen island. The house seemed empty and too quiet. He found himself listening for Angel's voice, waiting to hear her singing softly or talking to her stuffed animals. He swallowed hard. She was his sister. He was responsible for her. An open bag of cereal lay on the counter, and he dug out a dry handful and ate it. Suddenly, he picked up the bag of cereal and hurled it at a wall. The bag split open, and Fruityos sprayed everywhere.
This sucks! The gas man shouted. Oh, did that just occur to you?
Iggy said sarcastically.
I guess you can't fool the gas man. He might not look like the sharpest tool in the shed, but...
Shut up, said the gas man, and Iggy raised his eyebrows in surprise.
Look, this sucks so bad. Max left us here because she thought we couldn't keep up.
Iggy's face stiffened.
But was she thinking about what would happen if the erasers came back here? The gas man asked. Like, they got Angel not far from here. They saw all the rest of us, so they know we must be somewhere in the area. Why wouldn't they come back for us?
Huh, Iggy said thoughtfully. Of course, it would be hard to find this place and even harder to get to it.
Not if they have a chopper, the gas man pointed out, which they do.
Huh, said Iggy, and the gas man felt proud that he had thought of all this before Iggy had, even though Iggy was older, as old as Max and Fang, nearly ancient.
Does that mean we have to sit here and take it? The gas man asked, pounding his fist on the counter. No, we don't have to wait for the erasers to come get us. We can do stuff. We can make plans. I mean, we're not useless, no matter what Max thinks.
Right, said Iggy, nodding. He came to sit next to the gas man at the counter, his feet crunching over dry cereal.
Yeah, I see what you mean, so to speak. I mean, we're smart. We're tough as nails.
Max might not have thought about keeping the camp safe, but we did, and we can do it.
Yeah, now you're talking. But how? We could make traps, do sabotage, bombs.
The gas man rubbed his hands together. Iggy grinned.
Bombs are good. I love bombs. Remember the one from last fall? I almost caused an avalanche.
That was to make a trail through the woods, okay. There was a reason for it. Max approved it.
The gas man pawed through a hill of ancient newspapers, piles of junk, someone's old socks, a long-forgotten bowl that had once held some sort of food substance, oops, until he found a slightly oil-stained memo pad.
Knew it was around here, he muttered, ripping off used sheets. A similar search revealed part of a pencil.
Now, we need a great plan. What are our objectives?
Iggy groaned.
Oh, no. Years of Max influence are taking their toll. You sound just like her. You're like a Maxlet, a Maxketeer,
The gas man frowned at Iggy and started writing. Number one, make firebombs for our protection only. Number two, blow up demonic erasers when they return.
He held the paper up and reread it, then smiled. Oh yeah, now we're getting somewhere. This is for you, Angel.
Chapter 16. Angel knew she couldn't go on like this much longer. Her lungs had started burning bad an hour ago. She hadn't been able to feel her leg muscles for longer than that. But every time she stopped running, a sadistic white coat, Riley, zapped her with a stick thing. It jolted electricity into her, making her yelp and jump. She had 4 burn marks from it already, and they really, really hurt. What was worse was she could feel his eager anticipation. He wanted to hurt her. Well, he could zap her 1,000,000,000 times if he wanted. This was it. She couldn't go on. It was a relief to let go. Angel saw the whole world narrow down to a little fuzzy tube in front of her, and then even that went gray. She sort of felt herself falling, felt her feet tangle in the treadmill belt. The zap came once, twice, 3 times, but it felt distant. More an unpleasant stinging than real pain. Then Angel was lost. Lost in a dream. And Max was there. Max was stroking her sweaty hair and crying. Angel knew it was a dream because Max never cried. Max was the strongest person she knew, not that she had known that many people. Ripping sounds and a new, searing pain on her skin pulled Angel back. She blinked into white lights. Hospital lights. Prison lights. She smelled that awful smell and almost retched. Hands were pulling off all the electrodes taped to her skin. Rip. Rip. Rip.
Oh my God. 3.5 hours, Riley was murmuring, and its heart rate only increased by 17%. And then at the end, it was only in the last, 20 minutes that its peak oxygen levels broke.
It? Angel thought and wanted to scream. I'm not an it.
I can't believe we've got a chance to study Subject 11. I've been wanting to dissect this recombinant for 4 years, another low voice said. Interesting intelligence levels. I can't wait to get a brain sample.
Angel felt their admiration, their crummy pleasure. They liked all the things wrong with her, all the ways she wasn't normal, and all those stupid long words added up to one thing. Angel was an experiment. To the white coats, she was a piece of science equipment, like a test tube. She was an it. Someone put a straw into her mouth. Water. She started swallowing quick. She was so thirsty, like she'd been eating sand. Then another white coat scooped her up. She was too tired to fight.
I have to think of how to get out of here,
she reminded herself. But thoughts were really hard to string together right now. Someone opened the door of her dog crate and flopped her inside. Angel lay where she fell. At least she was lying down. She just had to sleep for a while. Then she would try to escape. Wearily, she blinked and saw the fish boy staring at her. The other boy was gone. Poor little guy had been gone this morning, hadn't come back. Might not.
Not me, Angel thought. I'm gonna fight. Right after I rest.
Chapter 17.
Ugh. This bed was horrible. What was wrong with my bed?
Irritated, I punched my pillow into a better shape, then started sneezing hysterically as clouds of dust sailed up my nose.
Wah! Chew!
I grabbed my nose in an attempt to keep some of my brains inside my head, but the sudden movement caused me to lose my balance, and with no warning, I fell hard to the floor.
Crash! Ouch! Son of a gun!
I scrambled to get up. My hands hit rough upholstery and the edge of a table. Okay, now I was lost. Prying open my bleary eyes, I peered around.
What the? Where was I?
I looked around wildly. I was in a cabin.
A cabin! Oh, a cabin. Right.
It was O Dark 30, not yet dawn. I leaped to my feet, scanning the room and saw nothing to be alarmed about. Except for the fact that, obviously, Fang, Nudge, and I had just wasted precious hours sleeping. Oh my God. I hurried over to Nudge, who was sprawled across a recliner. Nudge, wake up! Oh man! I turned to Fang to find him swinging his feet over the edge of a couch. He sneezed and shook his head. What time is it? He asked calmly. Almost morning, I said, terribly upset.
Of the next day!
He was already moving toward the kitchen cupboards. He'd found an ancient, stained backpack in a closet, and now he methodically started to fill it with cans of tuna, sealed bags of crackers, Ziploc bags of trail mix.
What's happening?
Nudge asked, blinking groggily.
We fell asleep, I told her, grabbing her hands and pulling her upright.
Come on, we've got to go. Dropping to all fours, I raked my shoes out from under the couch and blew dust bunnies off them. Fang, you can't carry all that, I said. It'll weigh you down. Nothing's heavier than cans. Fang shrugged and pulled the backpack on. Stubborn kind of fella. He moved soundlessly across the room and slipped through the window like a shadow. Now I was jamming Nudge's shoes onto her feet, rubbing her back, trying to wake her up. Nudge was always a really slow waker. Usually I appreciated the lack of word spew, which would begin when she was fully functioning, but right now we needed to move. I practically threw Nudge through the window, slithered out myself, then propped the screen back in place as best I could. A quick run down a country road and we were off, stroking hard, pushing to get airborne.
Sorry, Angel. Sorry, my baby.
Chapter 18. Okay. Despite the imminent sunrise, I felt better once we were flying above the treetops. But still, how stupid was that? What kind of loser was I to let us fall asleep in the middle of a freaking rescue? I thought about Angel waiting for us, and my heart clenched. With a sense of dread, I banked and set us going about 10, 12 degrees southwest. Anxiety fueled my wings, and I had to remember to find good air currents, set my wings at an angle, and coast when I could.
We had to rest, Fang said, coming up beside me. I shot him an upset glance.
For 10 hours?
Today we've got another 4 hours to go, maybe a bit more, he said. We couldn't have done it in one shot. It was late when we left. We're going to have to stop again anyway, right before we get there and refuel.
There's nothing more annoying than cold logic and reason when you've got a good fit going.
Fang was right, of course. Sigh. And of course we'd have to stop again. We hadn't even hit the California border yet. Far from it.
We going to storm the place or what?
Fang asked an hour later.
Yeah, Max, I was wondering what your plan was, said Nudge, coming up alongside. I mean, there's only three of us, and a whole bunch of them, and the Erasers have guns. Could we, like, drive a truck through the gates? Or even into a building? Or maybe we could wait until nightfall, sneak in, and sneak out with Angel before anyone notices us.
That crazy thought cheered her up. I kept silent. I didn't have the heart to tell her we had about as much chance of that as we did of flying to the moon. But if worse came to worse, I had a secret plan C. If it worked, everyone would escape and get free. Except me, but that was okay.
Chapter 19. Despite my growing anxiety, it was glorious up here. Not many birds flew this high. Some falcons, hawks, other raptors. Every once in a while, some of them would come check us out, probably thinking, man, those are some dang ugly birds. This high up, the land below took on a checkerboard effect of Robin Hoodsy greens and browns. Cars looked like busy ants moving purposefully down their trails. Every once in a while, I picked something small down below and focused on it. It was cool how some little tiny thing, like a swimming pool, a tractor, whatever, would ratchet into focus. At least those maniacs at the school hadn't had time to improve my vision like they improved Iggy's.
Gosh, I wonder what Iggy and the gas man are doing now, Nudge babbled. Maybe they got the TV working again. I hope they don't feel too bad. I would have. I mean, I guess it's kind of easier for them to be home, but I bet they're not cleaning up or getting wood or doing any of their chores.
I bet they're cursing my name from dawn to dusk, but at least they're safe.
Absently, I chose a flickering shape below and focused on it, watching a small blob become people, take on features, clothing, individuality. It was a group of kids, maybe my age, maybe older, who couldn't be more unlike me. Well, so what, I thought. They were just boring kids stuck on the ground doing homework, with bedtimes and a million grown-ups telling them what to do, how to do everything all the time. Alarm clocks and school and afternoon jobs. Those poor saps. While we were free, free, free. Soaring through the air like rockets, being cradled by breezes, doing whatever we wanted, whenever we wanted. Pretty good, huh? I almost convinced myself. I glanced down again and refocused. Then I scowled. What had, at first glance, looked like a bunch of boring, earthbound kids schlepping to school together now turned, upon closer examination, into what looked like several big kids surrounding a much smaller kid. Okay, maybe I'm paranoid, danger everywhere, but I could swear the bigger kids looked really threatening. The bigger kids were boys. The smaller kid in the middle was a girl. Coincidence? I think not. Don't even get me started about the whole Y chromosome thing. I live with three guys, remember? They're three of the good ones, and they're still obnoxious as all get out. I made one of my famous snap decisions. The kind that everyone remembers later for being either the stupidest dumb butt thing they ever saw, or else the miraculous saving of the day. I seem to hear more about the first kind.
That's gratitude for you.
I turned to Fang and barely opened my mouth.
No,
he said. My eyes narrowed. I opened my mouth again.
No.
Meet me at the northernmost point of Lake Mead, I said.
What? What are you talking about? Nudge asked. Are we stopping? I'm hungry again.
Max wants to go be Supergirl, Defender of the Week, Fang said, sounding irritated.
Oh.
Nudge looked down, frowning at the ground as if it would all become clear soon.
I had started a wide circle that would take me back toward the girl below. I kept thinking, what if that girl was in trouble like Angel and no one stopped to help her?
Oh, Max, remember when you got that little rabbit away from the fox and we kept it in a carton in the kitchen and then when it was well, you let it go? That was cool.
Nudge paused.
Did you see another rabbit?
Kind of, I said, my patience starting to wear thin. It'll take 2 seconds. I told Fang, I'll catch up with you guys before you've gone 40 miles. Just keep on course, and if anything weird happens, I'll meet you at Lake Mead. Fang stared ahead, the wind whipping through his hair.
He hated this, I knew.
Well, you can't please everybody all the time. Okay, I said briskly. See you in a few. Chapter 20. The thing about Iggy was, well, sometimes he could figure stuff out like a real scientist. He was that super smart. Scary smart.
Do we have any chlorine? The gas man asked Iggy. It seems to be kind of explosive when mixed with other stuff.
Iggy frowned.
Like what, your socks?
No, we don't have chlorine. No swimming pool.
What color is this wire?
The gas man leaned over and examined the tangled pile of stereo guts spread out on the kitchen table.
It looks like a robot came in here and threw up, he observed.
That wire's yellow.
Okay, keep track of the yellow wire. Very important. Do not confuse it with the red one.
The gas man consulted the schematics he had downloaded off the internet. This morning, Iggy had unfrozen the compressor fan inside the CPU, so the computer now worked without shutting down in hysteria every 10 minutes. He had just fixed the computer. Presto changeo.
Okie dokie, Gazzy muttered, flipping through pages. Next step, we need some kind of timing device.
Iggy thought for a moment. Then he smiled. Even his eyes seemed to smile.
Well, that's an evil grin, Gazzer said uneasily.
Go get me Max's alarm clock, the Mickey Mouse one.
Chapter 21. I landed a bit hard and had to run really fast to keep from doing a total faceplant. I was somewhere in Arizona, trotting through scrubby brush behind a deserted warehouse. I pulled my wings in, feeling them fold, hot from exercise, into a tight accordion on either side of my spine. I tied my windbreaker around my neck. There, perfectly normal looking. When I rounded the corner of the warehouse, I saw that there were three guys, maybe 15, 16 years old. The girl looked younger, maybe 12 or so.
I told you not to tell anybody about my little situation with Ortiz, one boy was yelling at her. It was none of your business. I had to teach him a lesson.
The girl bit her lip, looking angry and scared.
By beating him up? He looks like he was hit by a car. And he didn't do anything.